Hi, I'm Kim Bussey Chamberlain, a paramedic, mum, and author. As paramedics, we're often asked, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? And I'm here to encourage a different kind of conversation, to uncover what it takes to work in these frontline roles and the privilege we experience in meeting and connecting with patients. This podcast is all about what it's really like to be a paramedic or any frontline uniform professional. Each week, you get to hear from the real humans under the uniform, the memorable moments they've experienced in their jobs, and the people that have stayed with them for life. Let's hear what life is really like beneath the blue lights. Welcome to Beneath the Blue Lights, the paramedic podcast. I'm Kim, your host for this series. Today, I'm honoured to have the amazing Dr. Poonam Krishan on the podcast. Dr. Poonam, as she's known on the Medic Mum podcast, is a mother of two, NHS GP, columnist for The Eye and Glasgow Times, resident GP on BBC Morning Live, and also host of the brilliant Medic Mum podcast. I mean, are you actually getting any sleep, Poonam? The reason I wanted Poonam on the podcast is that I've always enjoyed her Instagram content. There's plenty of helpful medical information, but also a really realistic look at life as a mum of two. Obviously, my personal favourites are always the Instagram versus reality posts with kids. Nothing speaks to me more. I think the latest one that had me in stitches was your daughter wanting to hold the candles at your Diwali celebration. I can definitely relate to that kind of character. The podcast also provided me with the company that I craved during my second maternity leave in the middle of the pandemic. It's been such a good tool for so many new mums in lockdown. Recently, we've all heard the criticism that GPs are coming under. It's unfair, and it's made for a really tough few months for our GPs. So hi, Poonam. As I mentioned, it has been a tough time for GPs, so how are you doing?
Oh, do you know, it's so nice to be asked how I'm doing, especially as recently, you know, there's been such negativity towards primary care and GPs especially. It can just feel a bit grim at times. So thank you for asking. And I think I'm okay.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I think that's one of the things, isn't it? There's so much criticism that's been going around. And actually, people are just forgetting there's real humans at the end of that who have been working super hard through this pandemic, something that nobody's ever come across before or had to adapt to before. And actually, it is just nice to ask sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that it's been a kind of strange time, as I'm sure you will agree as well. But, you know, as primary care doctors and health workers, you know, we were kind of hailed as these heroes at the beginning, like put on these platforms, which actually, as you said, it came out of nowhere, this pandemic. And it was, you were trying to process it both as like just ordinary human beings with your own lives and your own concerns and anxieties. But then you're this kind of real sense of duty of care, which is what we're kind of trained forever to do. You know, it suddenly kicks in. You want to be in the heart of it. You want to be able to help people as much as you can. And navigating those two roles and being able to segregate them was really tough. For me personally, I found myself in like the last stages of a very high risk kind of pregnancy, working on the front line without PPE, with, you know, my husband's also a GP. And it was just such a nerve-wracking, scary, anxiety-provoking time. And as you saw, that was when I took to Instagram and was just kind of like a plea for help. Is there anybody else going through this? But equally, yes, I have like knowledge and there's so much misinformation. What can I do to help? But in return, I've really found a community to connect with. But then it was the return back to work. You know, we all just needed to do our bit. You just had to get back as soon as you could. And I think once you've gone through these last sort of 20 odd months of trying your best, of turning up every day, you get to this point where you are quite tired. You're tired mentally, physically. Mm-hmm. And when the media bashing started, you know, a few months ago, and you've gone from like hero to zero, and you're like, actually, I don't want any of that. I don't want to be zero. I don't want to be a hero. I'm just a mum. I was trying to keep her kids okay. It's just kind of surviving the juggle and wants to get to work and just make sure that she can get to the end of the day knowing that she's done her best. But just let me be, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's also an important point to make, is that also, you know, not only when this hit and professionally and at work did you have to make a lot of changes and tackle this unknown thing, But alongside that, a lot of people who are working on the front line were juggling that alongside their own worries for their own families, their children, their own health. Like you said, you know, high risk pregnancy, say end of the pregnancy. Like these are all things that were unknown. And not only are you having to balance your professional responsibilities and your response at work, but also really that's such a delicate balance between also your personal, where your worries would be at in terms of actually, how am I going to keep myself and my family safe as well, whilst also doing what I would like to and want to, but also need to do at work.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. And actually, funnily enough, I was talking about it tonight and saying to my wife, I think this is this podcast, I think we're going to have recorded 12 episodes, and it's all with frontline healthcare workers or uniform professionals. And I said, I think of those people, 8 or 9 of them have had COVID now. And that's also quite unbelievable, you know? And I remember actually seeing it on your Instagram when you did have it, and your young daughter as well, right? And I said, that's huge. That in itself is a massive statistic just from our interviews, to think that that's, you know, not only have people worked through this, but people have made big sacrifices of their own and have had this disease.
I think that's just it, isn't it? Is that we're not immune, and you are putting yourself into the line of fire every single day. And I remember it well, you know, at the time we didn't have the vaccine then, and my baby was only 8 months old. And, you know, I was like, I'm not sure, like, I don't think I've caught it from work, but how did I get it? Couldn't have been more careful. Mm-hmm. Then there was a guilt of passing it on to my daughter. We were actually isolating over Christmas and New Year, me and my baby. And, you know, and then I had long COVID, you know, so, but it is, as you say, like we have our own struggles and challenges throughout it. And I think that all we want in return is just a sense of equality as humans and compassion back. And I totally appreciate, you know, that it has been tough for so many people that have perhaps lost someone through this pandemic or have not had the access to healthcare in the way that they would want. But that, I think that quite often it can become quite a personal attack on you. Mm-hmm. That can be quite wearing when you're trying to, you know, you just want to say, wait, hold on a minute. Like, I flip-flop between a patient and a doctor too, you know, and like, I totally get it, but I'm trying my best. Everyone's trying their best, but we are, you know, the whole world is at the moment. We're just fed up of it, aren't we? We're all done. We're scunnered.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you say like, oh, 20 months of this now, you just, it just beggars belief, really, doesn't
it? Well, do you know what? The reason I know that to the day is because my daughter is literally the same age as the pandemic. So it's just nuts. What, and imagine her at 90. Well, how old am I? Well, the pandemic happened. She was born literally at the start of the first lockdown. I'm just like,
oh, wow.
Oh, I know how old you are, dear pandemic.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Just madness saying it out loud.
It is. Oh dear. Wow. Exactly. And I think that's the thing, you know, and we don't know how long it's going to go on for like this as well. And so actually people are still very much in the trenches. So to come under fire at a time like this is just really tough, really tough and really unfair.
Yeah. But we will march on.
Exactly.
As we always do.
Exactly. There's nothing better, actually.
And we'll cry about it in private.
It's just march on, completely broken.
Yeah.
Still carrying on.
Exactly. I do.
it's like that wartime spirit, but the NHS version.
Oh, I know. And I think it is sad. Like we kind of laugh about it just now, and but I think in all seriousness, the rate of burnout is huge amongst our colleagues, and it is something that's always on my mind. You know, I'm always just like, okay, you know, we get to Friday, you just do, you feel that sense of, God, I'm tired. I'm really like mentally just broken most weeks. But because we're so conscious, we don't want to reach that stage of burnout. You have to really prioritize self-care. And I think that that's where my head's at these days. It's all constantly reviewing, okay, what do I need to do to keep myself well? I need to stay well. It's a long slog. I love my job. It's never been a question about loving the job or not. But it's just that it's like, it's a marathon, isn't it?
Yeah.
You need to just keep yourself paced and going so that you can complete it. Yeah. Although the end point, you don't really know where in that is going to be.
The finish line just keeps moving further away. Taking a couple steps back, one of the things that I find really interesting is the idea that as medical professionals, there now exists this opportunity to have like a portfolio career. And it's one of those terms and phrases that has been like thrown around in other industries and around the world for quite a long time. But I think it's almost like a fairly new concept in our world.
Yes.
And I think it's super interesting because it makes the job kind of even more dynamic, and it gives you maybe bigger outreach and allows you to do more with your role. But I think also at the same time, it's a really nice balance to like complement, say, a role within the NHS. Have you managed to make that happen?
Yeah, so this was never part of the plan, the portfolio. I'd never heard of it. As you say, it's a very new concept. And for me, the trajectory very much was I'm going to become a doctor, and kind of picked general practice along the way. I always wanted to be a paediatrician, but when I did my first sort of year working as a paediatrician, I just felt that I was too emotionally attached. I found it really difficult to segregate the emotions when they were really poorly children, and I wasn't very good at dealing with sort of death and little ones. Very quickly I was like, okay, I love kids, I love families, I love everything about that, but it's not particularly acute care that I want to be involved in. It's general practice. So once I made up my mind, I was like, okay, trained, got to the end point of that. And I was like, right, got the practice. This is me until I retire. But it had a kind of couple of interesting things that happened to me. Interesting, I say, in that when my son was born, I had a very traumatic birth with him. And it landed me in intensive care with multi-organ failure. And it was a really touch-and-go situation. But it was the first time that I actually met myself as a patient. And I experienced vulnerability. I experienced what that view on the other side of the consultation table looks like. And it really intensified, like, well, what do I want to do actually with my job? Because I had really severe postnatal depression, which at the time I was kind of in denial for. But when I reached out for help, I was very much dismissed. You know, I was in and out within 5 minutes with my GP, and you know, no discredit to my GP, but I just didn't feel that I'd been seen and heard. And I was like, I never want to do that to any patient. And I think that you'll relate, like when you become a parent as well, I think it just puts you in a very different headspace. And so returning back to work, I had this complete perspective of, okay, you know, I want to work with families, but mental health is very important. And how can I really go into that? The healing process for me was very long after that traumatic birth. And that brought into my world holistic medicine and lifestyle medicine. And I kind of, you know, the reason burnout means a lot to me is that I found myself at a point of burnout, but I was trying to, you know, recover, but equally I was working full time. And this kind of process went on for a few years. And I recently shared on my Instagram that it was actually a conversation with my son where I was sitting down and I asked him on holiday, I was like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And he just flipped it back to me and he was like, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? And we were on holiday and I was ordering toilet roll for the practice. And I was like, God, is this my life? Like I'm ordering bog roll for my staff. Like, this is not what I signed up for. This is like, I never switch off. This is what do I want to do when I grow up? And I realized that there was just so many things, and that nobody had asked me that for forever, because you have this career trajectory and you think that's it. And I was like, well, I want to write. I love writing, and I loved English at school, and I want to write books. And like, I love drama. I'd love to do some TV work. And as I kind of said all this out, and he was like, well, why aren't you doing that? And I was like, why haven't I doing that? And that was the beginning of it, where then, you know, on social media, I kind of reached out, found some other doctors that were like doing lifestyle medicine, doctors that were perhaps writing and like, you know, medical journals at that time. And I was like, okay, how do I do this? And little by little over the last 2-3 years, that's how I've kind of started to venture into things that really matter to me. At the heart of it all is general practice. Mm-hmm. So I work, you know, 3.5-4 days in general practice. I have a day then when I get to do all the other stuff that I love doing. I get to teach medical students because part of my job involves education. And then doing the media stuff has been an amazing creative outlet for me, where, you know, I could speak to 40 patients a day and I might only get to educate 1 or 2 people about diabetes, for example. Mm-hmm. Or heart disease, whereas actually when you have platforms and you've got a wider audience, you can actually get positive health messages out. And when the pandemic hit, it was really the first time you could see so much of the benefits of healthcare professionals busting misinformation, using spaces like this to educate the public. And I think it's really opened up this concept that portfolio is about, one, using your tapping into your own sort of skills, interests, hobbies, passion, and combining that with your work. But also it's a longevity to avoid burnout. You know, I couldn't do 5 days a week as a GP for 40 years. I couldn't. I have so much respect for people that could do that and have done that. Like, I think they're incredible. But in modern day medicine, I think that it's a lot more complex.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. I think that's the same for paramedics as well. I think it used to be something that you could do for many years and it became, you know, a lifelong career. And I don't think that's the case anymore. We have a very young workforce, mainly because people are effectively retiring out of it much younger. But one of the ways in which I think we can improve that, again, is a similar thing. And it includes lots of different strands. You know, some people are doing part-time on the road stuff, part-time teaching and all that kind of thing. I think it's a really great option, and I think the more that becomes accessible to people or recognized, I suppose, the better, because that's one of the ways that the NHS could probably improve retention, really, is by letting people have things outside of the NHS as well, and that would help.
Exactly. And I interview medical students or school students for medicine every year. And again, a few years ago, it was like this light bulb moment when, you know, we ask, why do you want to be a doctor? You know, what are the things that you enjoy? And then I think if most of us healthcare professionals, you know, we reflected back to those interviews where we go, I love hiking, I love music, I love doing this. And somewhere along the line, we become so engrossed in our work, which is mentally, physically, and emotionally taxing. And we see all sorts of awfulness in our jobs. You know, people don't come to us, like with you as a paramedic, you're not going to see like happy scenarios. You're called in emergency, you're called in times of need. So we forget all those wonderful interests that we had. And that's why we see burnout and people leaving the profession earlier and earlier, because there's every chance of you forgetting and losing yourself if you actually don't take stock and go, well, I'm a person that has lots of different interests, and how can I now marry that up with what I do? And, you know, the world is your oyster. And I think medicine particularly is something that makes for a very versatile kind of career path where you can merge and mash up.
Yeah, definitely. So as paramedics, our pet peeve question is being asked, what's the worst thing you've ever seen? Absolutely hate the question. Always get it. Always hate it. As a GP, what's your pet peeve question? Do you have one?
Do you know what it is? It's the list. It's the list. It's like, oh, and can I just ask? And can I just also ask? And can I just... So that really does, because we're so time limited. And quite often when you, especially now when we're doing so much, like we've got different models of consultation now, so you're doing telephone and video and face-to-face, it's when you get the list and you feel that by the time you hit like the problem number three and you're just sitting there going, don't do it. And they go, and just one more thing. You're like, oh.
So is it the case?
So I'd say that's
probably, is it the case that with the list as well, that the real thing is at the end of the list? So then you have like no time.
It's always at the end. Yes. And the thing is, like, even if you start off by going, can you just tell me the most important thing today? And they're like, well, it's all of it's important. I've been waiting for 3 weeks to speak to you. You're like, no, but I just need to know that if you're having chest pain, can we talk
do that
about
bit
that
now?
Before we talk about your toenail? Yeah, like, you know, no, I want to talk about the toenail first. It's the list. It's the list that really, you know, it's, and the one
and
more
the one
thing.
More. Do you know, I think that's reminded me of my mum telling me a story about going to her doctor when she found out she was pregnant with me. I was a whoopsie baby that they were not expecting at that time. And she said she was so horrified by it, like, so just didn't know what to do and was like, oh, how has this happened? And she went to the doctor to be like, I'll have to go and, you know, get them to confirm it. And she said she'd gone in and she'd like made up like four or five different ailments on her list. And so she arrived and sat down and went through this list of like, I think I have conjunctivitis. And, you know, the doctors looked in her eyes and it's like, yes. Well, you quite clearly don't have conjunctivitis. So, you know, is there anything else? Yes, I also have a pain in my foot. Anyway, she went through about three or four things. I think I might be pregnant.
Yeah.
The doctor was like, what? I think I might be pregnant.
Yeah.
So that, I might be pregnant.
So that happens a lot. And we do say to our students as well, because sometimes, and I get it, like if you're really embarrassed about something, that you would want to test the water with a new doctor. So you just want to test them out. So they tend to kind of like come in with lots of insignificant things to begin with. But yeah, and I always find that it often happens to be the last patient of the day. Or it'll be on a day where you're really like trying to finish on time and then we're like, I've got six things I want to talk to you about today. And you're like, I've got 10 minutes. So yeah, no, I have had many patients like your mother.
Yeah. I always tell her it's okay though, because that was the best mistake you ever made. But you must also get the classic dinner party or drink situation where people are like, oh, you're a doctor.
Yes.
Brilliant. Wow. My aunt has actually had this really bothersome, whatever it is. What do you think that is?
It's even worse as an Asian. So especially in Asian communities where already like doctors are put on this complete pedestal. Yeah. And then you turn up to anything and it's not just the auntie that will come in. It will be the auntie and the auntie's auntie and the auntie's auntie's sister. And then the children will get involved and you're just like, oh my God, I did not come to give you a full-on surgery. And then if you happen to say, look, you know, I'm just here, but it's like, oh my God, how could you be so disrespectful? Like they take everything so...
This is family.
Literally and emotionally... It's yeah, exactly. And you so even going to when especially when I first qualified, we'd go to the local Hindu temple where you've got the whole community meeting up for prayer and there would just be this queue and my mum's so proud. My mum's like, yeah, here's my daughter, she's a doctor, and then like ask her anything. I'm like, mum, this is not cool.
Please don't.
Firstly, this is my social time, and secondly, it's dangerous for me to give people that. What do you mean it's dangerous? Why did I make you a doctor? Like, you know, so yeah.
Are you not a good doctor?
I have seen
all
sorts.
Do you not know what you're talking about?
Exactly. And then on top of that, are you just so disrespectful to your elders that you will not? But yeah, so I have had, like, just randomly taken to the toilet, like, boobs just shown to me, you know, can you just have a look at this rash and, like, my pubic area? Like, no, auntie, I don't need to. Oh, my God, when did we become, like, put that away? You know, piles. And can I just quickly chat to you about my pile? No, I'm eating my curry and chapati. Like, I don't want to know about your piles. Yeah, I've had it all.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny. Like, yeah. It's one of the perks, shall we say. Do you have any particularly memorable moments as a GP that have stayed with you?
Oh, there's been so many. I think that one that really just still till this day makes my heart all fuzzy was that I had this gorgeous elderly couple that I used to look after, and they would always just, you know, at the end of every conversation, we'd have these lovely chats. I knew about their children and like kind of knew their whole life story. They'd always be like, now make sure that you're eating, make sure that you look after yourself. And I was like, yes, yes. And they're like, we're always seeing you running around and we never see you actually sitting down. And then one day the husband had called in for a home visit. And they'd, you know, they'd said that he wasn't very well. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go visit them at home. And when I went out to see them, they'd put out the best spread. They had their finest china out and they'd made me this beautiful lunch, and I was like, oh my God. And they were like, yeah, we just thought that you never stop for lunch, so we just wanted you. And I was like, you can't call in for a home visit. And like, and it was just one of those, like, it was so beautiful and so thoughtful. And yeah, and I'll never forget, because actually sitting down with them sort of in their home for those 15 minutes, it was just such a warm sort of experience, because that's what a GP is. You are there in the community, you're part of people's stories, you're you know, right from little people to all the way to the elderly. And I think just for someone to worry about you and to invite you into their home and to make something for you, just it was over and beyond. And I think that that's the thing, is that it's not a one-way relationship that you have with your patients, particularly in primary care where you form that lifelong relationship, that you get so much back from your patients too. So I did have to kindly say to them, like, please don't do that again. That's very naughty.
But that's so nice. Oh, that's so lovely.
So yeah, that was just, it still stays with me today. It was just
gorgeous. See, our patients don't have the like connection with us that's like long term for the most part. Some of them do, but most of them don't. Yeah. So they don't have as much time to prep in that sense. But I went to an elderly couple once who were similarly like, oh, we know what it's like for you guys. You never stop. You never get to have a good meal. And we really want to make sure you have a really good supper tonight. And so she goes to the kitchen and we're literally rushing out of the house because her husband was actually really unwell. And she's like, and I just want to make sure that you're also okay. And I'm like, well, you just really need to go because your husband is very unwell. And she comes back with this whole roast, raw chicken, right? Roasting chicken. And I was like, I can't take this raw chicken from you. I said, one, like, it's probably for your dinner. Like, you guys need to have it. Apart from which, my shift's 12 hours long and it often carries on for, you know, a couple more, depending how busy we are. Like, I can't take a raw chicken in the back of an ambulance with me. I've got no fridge to put it in. It will probably end up, like, making me ill. And it is so nice of you to, you know, it's so kind of you. But, you know, she said, oh, don't worry, just run it back to your ambulance station and put it in the fridge. I was like, we don't really go back to the ambulance stations in our shifts anymore. That is, like, days gone by.
That is so
and she
lovely.
insisted. I had to take the chicken in the end, so I had like 12 hours of this raw chicken in the back of the
that
ambulance.
That is so precious,
and it was
though,
the nicest thing.
Yeah.
but obviously I didn't eat it after because
really
I was
though.
A bit worried, you know. 12 hours in the back of like
a
hot ambulance.
To this podcast, she ate it. Oh no, that is so beautiful. I think that this is it, even in sometimes like the most desperate situations, or you know, like, especially with some patients, they could be so poorly, but actually they still just want to do something for you. Yeah. And they never need to do it. But I think when they take and pause, you just think, gosh, this is why I went into this, because it is actually, it's the truest form of connection that you can have is with your patients. And it's just beautiful. That's a lovely story.
And yours. Mental health at the moment, particularly, is so important.
Yeah.
For you, it's a kind of the double whammy. You're working as a GP for the NHS in this, you know, weird time. And also you've had a pandemic baby and been, you know, the mum to a pandemic baby, homeschooling. It's such a different time to what we're used to. So what has this kind of taught you about mental health, and what do you do to maintain good mental health at the moment?
So my journey with mental health has been a really interesting one. Because as I said, I previously with my first child had, you know, really, really quite severe postnatal depression and had PTSD from that traumatic birth experience. So my second baby, such a beautiful miracle, but was a bit of a whoopsie. Wow, what? How? And a complete surprise. But it triggered a huge amount of all of those anxieties that I'd held previously. And that was when I was diagnosed with the PTSD, secondary to birth trauma, and had to have quite a bit of therapy actually through my pregnancy to help prepare. And of course, was not prepared for a pandemic to hit. So everything was about trying to gain control, and then literally everything went out of control. Mm-hmm. But then I think that what that and coupled with therapy that I had, but this pandemic has kind of shown me is that it's learning to control that which you can and not focusing on the things that you cannot control. And I think that because it was a complete barrage of situations that were so out of control, mm-hmm. that I went into just survival of the day. Mm-hmm. Like, I just had the baby, I came home, and literally the day I brought her home was the first day of homeschooling for my then 7-year-old. My husband was working, he couldn't take any paternity, so he was working in the GP surgery. I had nobody. Like, I think that I was like, okay, I have to get my kids through the day today. So I dawned on, like, if you've seen it on my Instagram, was the first time I was like, okay, bright red lip. That's what I'm going to do. And I'll never forget that morning. I was just like, leaky boobs. In my pajamas, just crying my eyes out, but put on this bright red lipstick. And I was not a red lippy person before this. And I faked it. Like, I just faked the day. I was like, I'm going to just get up, get ready. I'm going to talk to Instagram and I'm going to get my kids through today. And that just became my mantra every day, which was just going to get through today. Just going to get through today. And I've never been a person that's truly been able to do that, because I've always been that person who worried about the past or worried about the future. But the pandemic for me has very much brought me into the moment, has really taught me to accept that which comes. And on days where it feels overwhelming, just to let it flow. I cry a lot and I openly speak about it now. It's just that if some days feel like that, you've just got to let it out. And that's not a sign of weakness. Somewhere along the line, I've actually learned that that is my, for me, my biggest strength is actually being able to just blurt it out. And yeah, I think that's it. It's been red lips, high heels with pajamas on some days. If it's been crying into a bowl of nachos for breakfast, that's been fine. And it's just not beating myself up, because I know that I'm not alone in the way that I feel, and that actually all of us, like mental health, it used to be this thing of like, oh my God, you suffer from this and it must be because there's something wrong with you. But actually, when you fully accept that you are on a spectrum and mental health is a spectrum, you will dither along that spectrum every single day. And some days will be great, some won't be so great. You just got to do the best and get through the end of that day, knowing that tomorrow's a new day.
Absolutely. I think that's also something that's come across like on your podcast as well. And again, probably something that was super reassuring, because that community that we used to find ourselves having postnatally as new mums or with new babies totally disappeared in the pandemic. And I think that's something that your podcast really filled that gap, you know, for new mums, hearing two other mums talk about so many different things. But just even hearing those voices, you know, hearing the voices of two other mums in that pandemic time and being like, oh, there are other people out there who are doing this as well. and that's kind of amazing. Yeah. And who would have ever thought that like social media and the rise of podcasts and things would arrive at such a time that they would be so powerful in this specific moment as well.
Absolutely. I think that there's always something bigger, and I think that everything has a process to it. And that's the, I guess, what I mean by when we try and control a situation too much, it actually makes whatever challenges you're having more complex. Whereas if you just let go of the control and then just allow things to happen, actually, if a problem is created, it's created because there's a solution within that. And, you know, quite often it's the solution lies in all the little things and the simple things. And for us with the podcast, it was just having these conversations every day. We'd both had babies. We were both feeling quite isolated and lonely, and we were having these long phone chats. And then we were like, why don't we just turn this into a podcast? It was literally as simple as that. Because if we were finding it, surely other people were too. And in doing so, we got so much back, because, you know, when you yourself feel vulnerable and you connect with other people that are sharing that same vulnerability, like there's such a power and strength to that. And I think that especially in medicine or in, you know, in healthcare, you're taught to be resilient. You're taught to just toughen up and get on with it, and you don't show your emotions and you just, you know, you just get on. And actually, that's not the case. Like, you've got to allow time to process. You've got to allow time to feel and to share. And in that, there is the healing.
Absolutely. If you could change one thing to make your job easier, what would that be? Anything at all. It can be related to you personally finding the job easier, or tools of, you know, the job. Let's imagine there's no budgets.
God, I'd need more doctors, need more GPs. Yeah. There's just not enough of us. That's what I would want, because at the moment it's palpable of how many people are leaving, how few doctors there are. And I think that that's what this country needs so much more, is that we just need more people to want to do the job. And it saddens me, because that's not the case at the moment. Once upon a time, it was a career that so many people would have loved to do. Whereas now it seems to be a bit of a, like, it's not dying, but it's definitely not something that's so sought after. So I would want that. And I think we'd want endless money to try and save the NHS. Because it is, yeah. I think that it's only when, like for somebody like me, I feel really indebted to the NHS. It's my parents were immigrants when they came to this country. You know, the NHS was huge for my family and for my community. And I love everything about it. But it's sad when you start watching that the very foundations of that are crumbling so badly. Like the whole thing is at risk of falling. And that would be the saddest thing, especially as I don't think we quite appreciate how special what we have in this country is.
Yeah.
That's definitely. It, probably.
I can get on board with both of those.
Yeah. Let's change the world.
Poonam, I've loved having you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us and coming on to have a chat. To leave on a bit of a high, what's the last thing that really made you laugh at work?
Oh my goodness me. It's been the last thing was that a little baby, I was in baby clinic last week, and I've kind of really rejoiced the fact that it's been a very long time since I had a baby have an accident on me, but last week the little boy got me. And I was like, are you kidding? And he peed all down my scrub top, not just my scrub top, but right through to my vest and the bottoms. And there was just no escaping that, so I had to spend the day in baby pee.
Very well aimed. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I was like, I will remember you, little one, and I will tell you about this in a few years' time because I ain't going anywhere.
That's lovely. Well, we're here to provide an authentic voice for uniformed professionals and give our listeners a realistic insight into the jobs that we do. And you've done just that, Poonam. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that's it for today's episode. We'll be back next week speaking with another uniformed professional about what it's like beneath the blue lights. Thank you for being here, lending your ears to our frontline workers. We're here to shift the conversation, and we can't do that without you. Thank you to Dr. Poonam Krishan for being our guest today. Remember to follow us on @theparamedicpod on Twitter and @theparamedicpodcast on Instagram. If you found this podcast to be useful and enjoyed listening, please do leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, as it really helps other people like yourself find the show. Thank you to Pure Creation Media for producing the podcast. I'll see you next week.